Hello and live from the Stew Stew Studio. It's The Download. I'm your host, Dave Richardson. Of course, it is Stew's Days at the Stew Stew Studio. I'm actually not there, but live at the Stew Stew Studio is Stew Kedwell. Stew, welcome back. I think we missed a couple of weeks.
We did. Yeah, we did. Good to see you, Dave.
Yeah, great to see you. And in the meantime, you up and got named the Global Chief Investment Officer at RBC Global Asset Management. Not coincidentally, is the biggest investment management company in Canada. So it's a pretty big announcement. So from me and all your colleagues and friends, congratulations. It is it's well earned.
Well, thank you. It's a real privilege, you know, to be working hard on behalf of lots of unit holders. So it's a real privilege. And, you know, Dan Chornis, who is retiring and has been here for 30 years, I've worked with him for a long time. And, you know, I'm ready to kind of stand on the shoulders of a giant and, you know, keep adding wood to the pile, hopefully.
Yeah, and that's what's great about it. And again, we both know Dan. We've had Dan on the podcast, and if you missed Dan's appearances over the years, you can go back in the archive if you subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. I don't think we had Dan on YouTube, although it's probably because he's better looking than most of us, so it's a little intimidating. Smarter and better looking is a bad combination to be on a video with. But although I guess I do that with you every week too. But anyways, all aside, Dan is a legendary investment manager in Canada, which is why we had him on. You and I would both say we've probably learned as much about investing from him as anywhere else. And again, because I know the road that you've followed, it's a perfect fit, I think, to have you sitting in that role. So again, congratulations, and everybody who's now we got a huge fan base of Stew heads out listening to Stew's Days, and so they would I'm sure they're cheering with you at the helm, and likely not going to see a whole lot of things change. Just as you say, keep putting wood in the fire and keep the fire burning, and away we go.
Yeah, like I started working with Dan in 1999, and I've been through all sorts of market cycles with him, and I think a couple of things that will be high on the consistently list, but Dan is big on what gets measured gets done. Yep. He's big on incremental, like just dissecting a problem down to its roots and figuring out how to fix each. Or augment each portion to, small improvements in each thing. Big on data, big on curiosity, big on reverse engineering. Like this is what we think, but this is what would be required for success. The list of things that, I've learned from him would be multiple podcasts on their own. So, he's been so good for our unit holders. He's been so good to so many people in our firm, and I just can't say enough about the shoes that I have to fill.
Yeah, I'm hopefully going to be able to get him on to do a last couple of episodes and get him to sort of reflect on markets over the I think it's well over 40 years that he's been managing money for people. And now that could be a 5-hour episode, so we'll warn the fans on that, but we will get them on. But let's turn to the task at hand, because we have been away for a couple of weeks, and if nothing else, we've seen an uptick in volatility. We've seen a lot of stories from a lot of different places with concerns about AI. The way that whole business is structured, we've talked almost endlessly over the last several months about valuations in that space, and sure enough, we're starting to see a little bit of a pullback in that area, and markets in general. What do you make of this kind of uptick in volatility and what we've been seeing most recently?
Yeah, so I think there's kind of like it's kind of three things. So you know, markets are a scale. Like on the one hand, you have the narrative, and then on the other hand, you have the valuation associated with that narrative. So, you know, I think the first thing to kind of step back to is, you know, part of where people's heads were at was the Fed or central banks, if things slowed down, could lower interest rates, which would provide the support for that, you know, the kind of the cushion for that slowing if it took place. You know, some of the commentary has been a little bit more stern about whether or not interest rates might drop. It doesn't mean that their capacity to lower them has disappeared should things slow down, but you know, they weren't as amenable maybe to markets as some people wanted. So, you know, that started to cause a little bit of change in that narrative. The second thing is that, you know, there has been a handful of U.S. consumer data that hasn't been, you know, quite as robust. You know, particularly, you know, we've talked about the K-shaped economy, particularly at the lower end, not quite as robust. The next thing that's come along is, you know, the massive amounts of capital investment that's going on in data centers. The, you know, the shift that has caught people's attention is that, you know, for a long time, it was all out of the free cash flow of these big businesses. So, you know, you look at Microsoft and Meta and what have you, prodigious cash flow generators from their core business. They were taking that cash flow, reinvesting it into data centers to try, you know, to make a return over time. And some of those capital expenditure numbers got so large that even the biggest of the big had to start borrowing money, right? And, you know, borrowing money to make capital investment is a slightly different aspect for markets, right? Like it's,
sure.
You know, like if you're out and you got $5 in your pocket and you spend it, so be it. If it works out, it doesn't. But if you borrow the $5 from me and it doesn't work out, you still have to give it back, right? Yep. So, you know, as we start to see these massive capital expenditure numbers and you start to see, you know, some of the financing of it switch a little bit from just free cash flow to borrowing, you know, people wonder a little bit more about, you know, how will all this, what will the exact timing of these investments be? How will they pay out or pay off rather? And, you know, so that was another, you know, that's also been kind of another kind of emerging dynamic as the CapEx surged was, you know, okay, well now there's a bit more debt involved than there had been in the past. And, you know, the one thing that also kind of took place at the same time was, you know, some circularity or perceived circularity, which, you know, if the demand, you know, kind of blows the doors off and is as strong as, and all these executives think it's going to be extremely strong. If the demand is really strong, then the circularity won't matter. But in the meantime, it gives people some cause for concern when they see, you know, I'm going to make an investment in you and then you're going to buy product from me. And, you know, that's a little bit not quite as clean as just like, you're going to buy my product and I don't have to do anything for you. You know, so that, you know, those have been, you know, that's kind of been emerging as well. And then, you know, just the last part is there has been a couple of, you know, companies that have, you know, had some issues with their lending, you know, a couple of auto parts companies, and, you know, the documentation around whether or not you were factoring receivables or whatever it might be, you know, some of these loans have gone bad. And It's not like anything that's you know, significantly impacting the banking system, but it's just not the type of headlines that you necessarily want to see. So, you know, we've talked in the past again about those scales where you have, you know, what the market's focused on and the valuation. And if the valuation's a little bit elevated and the market's focus changes, it creates volatility. And that's, you know, kind of the environment, you know, that we're in right now. You know, maybe it will persist for a little bit, right? You know, markets have been extremely strong, and you know, when we sit and look along the way, you know, the odds of, you know, some type of, you know, pullback or, you know, modest correction activity, like that would just be like kind of normal course. Yeah. So you always just kind of, you know, look for these different ingredients where, you know, the market, you know, tends to focus their attention on. And, you know, there's lots of old, you know, market sayings. You know, we've talked about, you know, opinions about facts at prices. Another one is that narrative follows price. So, you know, when things are going up, the stories are all like, well, this is all very positive and nothing else matters. And then the moment you have a wobble, the narrative switches to like, well, look, you know, some of these other things are going on. And, you know, like every situation, there's kind of what I think, what you think, and the truth, right? Like, you know, we have to kind of, you know, work our way through, you know, kind of getting back to those facts. And, you know, that's the environment we're in right now.
Yeah, I guess the big question then, though, is Stu. So if I think of my marriage, you know, the narrative was when I was dating and proposed and the first few years, the honeymoon and all that, I kept getting better looking, and that was the narrative. It just followed, and then all of a sudden I started to get old and chubby, and the narrative turned, and I've never been able to get it back, the narrative the other way.
Then you became wise. Then you became wise. So then the narrative just, you know, switches a little bit, and not wise and funny. So it, you know, there's always something that people will focus on.
Well, so that's it. So is this a case where if I'm an investor and I've been sitting there and I've been kind of worried that this might happen, right? So that's the circularity you talk about is what I was referring to as structural issues in the way everything's financed amongst all these AI companies and data centers and that some people say is somewhat akin to what you had in the build out of the internet in the late 1990s. And then ultimately what happened was, well, the internet was going to be big. Obviously we live on it today. But the numbers weren't there when they needed to be, given all the investment that was going to be made. And of course we had a lot of those stocks fall apart and unwind. Again, and if we use my marriage as an analogy, yes, I did find there were other attributes that I was able to bring to the relationship that kept the relationship thriving and strong. So are we in one of these cases though where it's kind of it for this sector? Or is this a buying opportunity, or is this just one of those cases again where this cycle or these movement and kind of what we've been waiting for, Stu, creates opportunity elsewhere?
Well, I think it's a bit of both, right? Like, so, you know, right off the top, dollar cost averaging is a great way to get exposure to all types of these events. So, you know, that's one thing to think about. But then underneath the surface, to your point, like we're starting to see healthcare after, you know, years of nothing starting to emerge. Energy in Canada after not even a big movement in the price of crude, but, you know, all of a sudden energy breaks out to a new 52-week high. Utilities, like people have thought a lot about the data centers and they said, well, maybe one of the constraints is actually the power side of things. So maybe that's where, you know, there's money to be made. So in the context of a portfolio, you know, there's always areas where, you know, you've been planting seeds because they look interesting and you don't know exactly, you know, when they're going to start to turn out. And then, you know, they start performing better along the way as well. So, you know, overall, you know, the kind of the dollar cost average approach works within the portfolio. You're always trying to say, well, what are some new things that are emerging that aren't maybe receiving the same attention that they had in the past? And, you know, often if someone says, well, I'm buying that, and you're like, oh, that's, why are you doing that? That's crazy. That's probably not, you know, a bad place to be, you know, going, you know, to have a look or something like that. So, you know, it's a very active time. Like, I don't know when things aren't active. You're always looking, you know, through the markets, but, you know, just like there's different acts to a play, there's different things that emerge at different times. And, you know, we're very focused on, you know, some of these areas that might be, you know, emerging a little bit, and starting to do better. There's, you know, that it's, you know, the technical view is big bases, right? Like if you have good companies that are emerging from a long base, you know, that could be, you know, those can be, you know, very interesting stocks.
Yeah. And, you know, I think if you go to your play, analogy there, you know, I don't think anyone doubts that the AI story, at least in terms of changing the way the world operates, has a happy ending, unless you go to the whole robots take over the world and kill everyone thing, which we'll leave out of it. But just in terms of actually changing the way business operates, efficiencies, unleashing profitability, I don't think anyone doubts that this is a game changer, just like the internet was. And then I think the other big thing to remember is, and we've talked about this ad nauseum over the years, is markets do not go straight up. In fact, very few things go straight up. They go up and there's bumps along the way. So to have a market that, you know, as I've been saying, and I'm out doing my my roadshow with investors right now, and you know, we've basically, coming into October, we generated 60 months of returns in 30 months. Yep. In a balanced portfolio. So stocks and bonds, and a, yes, and a broadly diversified, not just in AI, not just in tech, broadly diversified portfolio. And that's fantastic. And it came off, of course, a horrible bond market in 2022, horrible stock market. And you can go back and listen to all the things we were saying back then on previous episodes of the podcast. But that's not sustainable, or is not going to continue forever. So we're sitting right now, we've pulled back, you know, 5 or 6% on the major indices. Doesn't even qualify as a correction. And you have to expect that, because those things happen more than once a year, a 10% pullback. So there's not any real reason to panic, but it does remind you, because if you got, you know, 60 months of returns in 30 months in a balanced portfolio over the last 2.5 years, if you just said, I'm just going to throw any rational measure of risk out the window, and I'm just going to go and buy the craziest, riskiest stuff I can find that has a .ai in the name of the company, or any number of areas, that was where I was going to maximize my return. Well, hey, all of a sudden, as you say, that narrative on the way up, that it's unstoppable, shifts, and people start to go, well, hey, maybe, and this is what a chief investment officer I know focuses on much more than people would think, not just the upside return, but managing the risk as well, doing it in a sane and measured way, that it's a good tap on the shoulder to remind people that markets reward the same things over time. They get a little frothy at times, but generally come back to where what history's taught us. And so, you know, you've seen things like Bitcoin's from down from, you know, 124 to 92. You look at some of the names around, nuclear power, or some of the things at the fringes of data center, also down, you know, 40, 50%. Just in the last month, you know, and you know, if we look at Nvidia that we might get into talking about their earnings tomorrow, you know, it's just kind of just back where it was in the summer, and so which is not that big of a pullback. Again, I think we got to put things in perspective, but also point out something that we've been talking about, which is at some point the amount of risk you're taking matters. And if something's going to go straight up, it can fall straight down unless there's a reason for it not to happen. And historically, what you learn is there's not many things that go straight up and get to 100 times earning, 1,000 times earning, or infinity, because there are no earnings, without, you know, taking a pause along the way.
Yeah, it's just it's a function of volatility. You know, there's always, you know, very powerful long-term trends around these stories, because that's what creates, you know, the enthusiasm is often justified, you know, in terms of the actual outcome. But, you know, the stock market can move beyond it, then it can check back to it. It, you know, it's a, you know, it's a pathway that involves a lot of human emotion. And, you know, when you look at the shares that actually trade, the marginal investor might have a very different incentive than the long-term investor, but it still causes, you know, a change in price. You know, I think what you always want to be doing, and I, you know, I'll tie it back to, you know, going back to, you know, one of the things we started with on Dan, right, is what is required for my success in this investment? And, you know, the areas that have shown some emergence, energy, healthcare, things like this, the bar is lower there because they've been out of favor. And, you know, you sit there and say, like, boy, like, what would it take to make, you know, 10, 15% in like an energy stock? Well, it might only take, you know, $5 on the price of crude because the balance sheets have improved so much. They're out of favor. They're paying dividends. You know, these types of things, you know, change. And, you know, so it's just, you know, looking through the portfolio, you're always looking for where is the price, you know, maybe giving me an undiscounted opportunity, and where in the portfolio is it maybe not discounting the potential for, you know, some risk, and moving from one to the other in the portfolio. There's lots of good companies, right? Like, you know, you need to have a list of good companies, but then, you know, understanding where they sit on the, how much earnings are they generating? What is the margin that is generating those earnings? How much revenue growth is required? What is the valuation that we apply to it? And what does that do for, you know, the odds of our success? What are we, you know, kind of banking in the future? And it's a very iterative process, and very, you know, just constant. And as soon as you finish with the bullish case, you have to then say, well, what would make it less bullish? And, you know, just kind of keeping going around in a circle and, you know, trying to apply some judgment around the different outcomes that exist for different businesses.
Yeah, you kind of think of it as the high jump and the limbo. And so you've got some of these stocks, which we've seen that they're doing the high jump and they're doing really well. They're getting up and over that, they're getting up and over that bar higher and higher and higher. And you're just like, wow, this company is going to be able to jump, you know, it doesn't matter how high we raise the bar. But of course, at some point, the bar is too high and they knock the bar down. Versus there's some other companies that are just, they're limboing, and you're just, they get down, they get real low, get down all that flexibility down. They can't just, and the bar gets down to a point where you just can't get under it anymore. You got to go over it. And that's that reversal that you see. And, you know, again, you need some of those high jumpers, but you want to be careful when the expectations are so high that they can't be met. You know, sometimes you want to go look over at the limbo area and see if there's some good companies that for whatever reason have been ignored and just and have much easier roads ahead to create a narrative.
Yeah. And it happens at the company level. It happens at the country level. It happens between asset classes. And, you know, we do our best to, you know, to navigate the opportunities and risks that exist in all of them.
Happens in careers too, Stu. I mean, you're jumping a big high bar, and I'm limboing. And as we said, I'm coming up on 60. I'm just not as flexible as I used to be. So I'm that bar is getting awful low on me. But interesting. Actually, just before we finish, let's just talk about NVIDIA earnings, and you'll see headlines. You know, NVIDIA earnings will set the one company's earnings will set the stage for everything that happens in the market over the next year or the next month. Or do you buy into that at all?
Well, it's important. Like any, you know, it's a very large weight in the index. When you're 7 or 8% of the S&P 500, you know, the outcome's going to matter. You've had a tremendous amount of news flow around data centers, how much is going to be invested, and that will all flow through to their revenue line. You've had, you know, some question about, you know, the returns that all these data center operators are going to end up earning. So, you know, the money that's been announced, that will likely get spent. That's going to be good for their, you know, revenue. Sure. In the next little while. You know, the question is, does the market begin to see the apex of the growth, right? Or you know, like we've talked about, like the second derivative is definitely slowing just because of the law of large numbers. You know, what will receive the maximum attention is more of a challenging one. I think, you know, the one thing that we spent a lot of time thinking, the outright valuation is one thing, which is, you know, not as elevated as other stocks have been, during their big bull phases. It's really, trying to get into the sustainability of the margin profile, because, the company's margins are very wide. The margins for many stocks have improved in recent times. Technology by its nature is less capital intensive. There's all, sorts of benefits, but, this is a margin, a margin profile. Like if we looked at like Google's margins or we looked at, some of these companies, the margins are say plus or minus, 4 or 5% one side or the other. NVIDIA's have been very strong. So, I think that's, there's a couple of things, to think about. There's no question that technology is very dominant and, it's a very well-run company in terms of, being at the cutting edge, but it's this relative to expectations component. And, when we get into, it's very hard to predict on just, one quarterly event, but even if it's a big, kind of boomer of a quarter, given everything that's been announced, I don't know if that will be enough. It might be enough because it's pulled back a little bit, but these discussions that have entered, some of these areas, I'm not sure there's a piece of evidence today that can put an end to them, because what's really in the discussion is how much will AI be used and who will pay for it and how much will they pay for it in a couple of years. So, one thing that we're, more interested in the portfolio is looking at names that are announcing, AI is this kind of revenue opportunity for us, or it's this type of efficiency opportunity for us, where you maybe have some more traditional businesses that are saying, we're just figuring out how to use AI as a tool. And, maybe that's an opportunity that's not priced into our stock.
Yeah, we're even going through it in the office, right? There's tools that are there, and you got to learn to use them. And as you do learn to use them, you're always blown away by what they can do for you. So again, you can see that this very much is real. It's just going to be interesting to watch it play out, and ultimately all this investment, how it ends up on one company or another's bottom line. And that's what you're there to figure out for investors, you and your big team, all around the world. So Stu, thanks for joining us, and congratulations, again. Are you gonna continue to be a dollar cost average boy, or do we have to change it to dollar cost average man or dollar cost average guy? Is it, you got to think about, maybe you need a new title on your dollar cost average position.
Yeah, dollar cost average boy is still not a bad one.
I did, don't worry. I did notice you sneak it in right there in the middle of the podcast. I'm sure the regular listeners did as well, because but once again, all joking aside, dollar cost averaging, you're sitting there watching what's going on in markets and you're going, this is exactly what I've been waiting for. Right. So Stu, again, congratulations, and hopefully you'll continue to join us. I heard Joe Rogan's after you for regular appearances, and some of the other podcasters. So you might not want to hang around with me anymore, but we all hope you do.
Okay. Well, Dave, I can't wait for the next one, and thanks so much.
This recording has been provided by RBC Global Asset Management Inc. for informational purposes only, and is not intended to be investment or financial advice. You should consult your own legal, accounting, tax, investment, or financial planning advisors before engaging in any transactions.